listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams, or macros, or whatever it is that you're counting, so you can easily get to a healthy weight and get on with your life, because that is my goal for you. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. If you would like to call and talk with me today, the number is 323-203-0815. 323-203-0815. I would love to hear what is on your mind and what is eating at you, because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating, the real problem is not food. It's not. It really isn't. The real problem is what's eating at you, what's weighing on you. So let's talk about that, and you'll see incredible changes in your life. And I already have Josh calling, so that was quick. Hi, Josh.
Hi, I just wanted to call in quickly. So how are you doing?
Well, I'm doing just fine, Josh. Thank you very much. I'm doing really well. Well,
great.
I should say this.
Okay.
Actually, I'm going to answer your question in reality, because my automatic answer is, oh, I'm fine. What about you? But I will say that today is the year since I lost someone very dear to me to COVID. So my heart hurts a lot, but I'm also grateful that what a difference a year is. She died at the beginning of everything, and it seems like we're now moving towards the end of it. So for that, I'm very grateful. So I'm feeling painful and grateful at once. And now you, how are you?
Yeah, that's fine. You know, it just makes me think, I feel really bad because here I am not wanting to get a vaccine for myself because people are like having bad reactions from it. And,
Josh. Out of millions of people, six people had a bad reaction to the J&J vaccine. And out of tens of millions of people, 20 people had a bad reaction. No, 22 had a bad reaction. And 20 of them had bad reactions in the past. So please don't let those kinds of, and they're all okay, by the way, everyone's fine. Don't let those kinds
I'm worse than that because I don't even want to get a fever. People are getting fevers. Like everyone's getting a fever.
Not everyone. I got it. I didn't have, the only thing that happened to me with Pfizer was a sore arm. Ronan, my engineer, said his wife and he got their second dose last week. Pfizer, they are fine. You get Pfizer, you're not going to get a fever. I don't know anyone who got a fever with Pfizer. Sore arm. Moderna, yes. Moderna, people have definitely gotten side effects with that. But Josh, I think the idea is that being a little bit targeted, that something bad is going to happen to you, even though the odds are so small. So is there something here that goes beyond the vaccine and more towards feeling targeted or in a way perversely special? Like it's going to happen to you and not millions of people it doesn't happen to, but it's going to happen to you. I don't know. These are just my first
thoughts. Yeah, it definitely feels like there's an erotic component to this because I can't make sense of why I just wouldn't want to get it. But on the food front, I would say that I'm depriving myself a little bit, and it's been good. It's been a while since I've eaten, and when I do that, I feel like I can get into the deeper layers. So I'd like to say that I'm coming to you hungry today, which I thought would be better. Maybe we could get into the weeds a little bit, because I think when I'm hungry, I have less of a defense up. Is that right?
Well, there's no right or wrong. There's just what might be right or true for you. Recently, I told someone that psychology per se is the study of that which pertains to the most people. But psychoanalysis is that which pertains to a specific person. So even though there are theories of the mind of psychoanalysis and theories of all of this, you know, and yes, it is what's eating at you and all of that, it's important to figure out what it is for you. So if you're hungry, you're saying you're not distracted in some way. I'm not sure what you're saying.
I would say I'm not distracting myself because, you know, eating food, you also have to digest it. So it's a whole big thing. If you have a meal, it's not like it's over as soon as you're done eating. You know what I mean? So if you don't eat, you have all of those things that are not going on. So I feel like
it's a big problem. Yeah. Okay. So, so if you're using food to sort of sedate yourself in a way, because if you eat something and then you're digesting and maybe you feel like, feel a little sort of heavy or not much energy, or it affects you in some physiological way, then your mind is not as available to you. So today you're hungry, meaning that your body is not in a sedated place or semi-sedated, and your mind is more available. So what is on your mind?
Yeah, so what's on my mind is, I think that it's almost like a numbing effect. That I'm going to eat and my feelings will go away, which I guess is very common. It's a very common thing.
Well, you're feeling it is a distraction. Look, there are two ways to deal with feelings. One is to distract from them. Food, eating is a distraction. Working is a distraction. Drinking is a distraction. Gambling, shopping, internet, all of these things are distractions from ourselves. And we can pick healthy means of distractions. And that's why people give the very ill-advised advice to, well, when you want to eat something, go take a walk or go brush your teeth. Or they're saying, hey, do a different distraction from yourself. And of course, it never works because you can brush your teeth all day. It's not going to be as satisfying a distraction as eating ice cream. So that's one way of dealing with feelings. The other way, and the only way to ultimately get them out and get rid of them, is to feel them, to actually express them.
Yeah. And I have to say, I did cry last night. And when I cried, I realized I wouldn't have been able to get to these feelings if I had eaten. And so I've really tried to work on myself according to, I said, I better not eat if I want to call in, because I wanted to come with you with some, at least, effort on my part. And I feel like when I removed the food, I was able to just to think of whatever I was thinking of. It happened to be something where there was a movement to the emotions. It wasn't just stuck. And it was that, and it was done. And then,
yeah, that's how you get rid of feelings. Like, it's one thing to say, well, I'm sad. And in our culture, we sometimes confuse identifying emotions with feeling them. Saying, oh, I'm sad, is identifying your emotion. Crying is the expression of the emotion. And that's why you felt better after you cried, because you got it out. You expressed it.
Yeah. And it must have been something from childhood. I mean, eventually, I'd like to go into my childhood. And I would say that it's possible that there were feelings from my childhood as a baby that potentially were off limits, that I couldn't feel. You know, that just came to mind spontaneously as I'm talking to you. So, yeah.
Absolutely. We tend to think, or our culture tends to think, that the past is in the past as soon as it's over. But the past haunts us until we work through it. Example of a baby thing. I had a patient who watched this movie called Trainspotting from the 90s, I guess. And there's this one scene, without giving too much away, it's about a baby in a crib whose parents go on this drug, they just get all drugged out, and she's crying and crying and crying and crying and crying, and they're just too drugged out to help her. And I won't say what happens, but my patient watched this and became overcome with horrible, racking sobs, like had to leave the room. She was so overcome and so bereft, and she couldn't understand this intense reaction to this scene in the movie. And she was talking to her mom sometime later, and she's in her 30s. And her mom was like, "Oh, you were such a good baby. I remember we would leave you in your crib upstairs, and we would go outside in the back, and we would sunbathe, and you were fine." Well, she was not fine. She did not remember that at all because she was a baby, but unconsciously she remembered it. Her unconscious remembered it. And when she saw that scene in Trainspotting, her own experience is what she was grieving, her own experience of being left in a crib. And so it's power.
You know, I feel like movies for us, if we've ever watched a movie and we've walked out, or we've been too upset or too scared, I mean, maybe horror movies, you can put them aside, but I wouldn't even put those aside. I feel like all of the movies that we've seen that we've become abnormally upset over is some replay from the past, from the childhood. I'm almost guaranteed. That's how I feel about it. But I'll speak, you know, specifically to myself. I would say that a lot of stuff gets transmitted to our parents. So if we look at our grandparents, what were they doing to our parents that our parents thought it was okay to do to us? So it's this whole long chain,
Josh,
seemingly okay behavior. Yeah, that's not okay.
You are absolutely right. And the word for that is multi-generational transmission process. You are absolutely right. Everything, it gets handed down. There is no, when people often talk about genetics, like a genetic predisposition towards binge eating, say, no, it's learned behavior that it was seen and passed down or whatever. But Josh, you're now talking very much about how theoretically people pass down behavior. And that is absolutely true. But are you perhaps distancing yourself from, by thinking in this theoretical way, are you distancing yourself from whatever it was that made you cry, for example?
Yeah, I mean, let's just assume that there's a connection, because I haven't figured it out myself yet, so we can do it together. I would say that there's probably a fear element of maybe abandonment, or just having someone not be totally attentive to me personally, but then at the same time, maybe being scared and being, having the person be too attentive and being like, where there's a boundary violation, you know, of some kind, or some sort of abuse. I mean, this is all sort of happening to me in childhood, I feel like.
So what was happening the other day when you were crying? What were you aware of?
Well, this was last night, and it was because I hadn't eaten. And I'd like to think about it in terms of my childhood. And I would say that it's probably just a lack of love. But then also maybe I felt too scared of my parents to want the love that I wasn't getting. So I feel like there's a manipulation going on. It's like, you're crying too much, stop crying. And then it's like, you're scared. But then the next time you want to cry, you're too scared to cry. Or you're, so you know what I mean? It works both ways. parents are very geniuses, you know, to make us, in a sense, not feel or...
Parents do the best they can given their situations and their histories, to your point, their upbringing. They do their best, but often their best hurts us to one extent or another. But perhaps what happened last night was you were physically hungry and therefore more aware of the hunger for love, connection, attention, something, some kind of yearning that perhaps you, being physically hungry, made you aware of emotional hunger. And that was painful.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it was the food that became the solution for a lot of sort of difficult feelings.
Food is a balm. It is our first experience of relationship. It is a way of comforting ourselves. It is a way of distracting ourselves. It is a way of sedating ourselves. It is a way of turning emotional pain to physical. If you eat so much that your stomach hurts, you're turning emotional pain to physical pain. It does so much for us. And in that way, it is a friend, but it is also an enemy because it ultimately doesn't help. It makes us feel bad. It hurts our bodies, and it keeps hidden that which we have to pay attention to.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, to give myself and everyone a benefit of the doubt, there's a survival instinct that doesn't want to deal with the deeper stuff. So the survival instinct says, we need to survive. We're in the jungle. We can't feel. So let's eat, because at least then we're going to be okay. But to try to find happiness from that is not really going to be so successful.
Josh, what are you hungry for?
Right now?
Last night.
I would say,
you get in touch with.
I think, yeah, I feel like for me, it's, part of it is actually a baby being not so good. Like maybe there's a part of it that the baby actually is misbehaving, because not all of us are born as saints. So part of me, I feel like there is a discipline part. What would you think about that?
What I think is that it's not about behaving or misbehaving. It's about the way that we're cared for, the way people respond to us when we have needs or when we make mistakes, and we interpret these situations as being about ourselves, because kids are egocentric. It's for a kid to say, wow, my parent really doesn't know how to deal with my feelings, doesn't know how to take care of me in this way, would be horrible, because we are dependent on our parents for years. And so a kid can't say, there's something missing in my parents' ability to take care of me this way. Kids say, what's wrong with me that my parent isn't being the way I want him or her to be, or both? It must be me. I need to fix myself. I've got to figure out what's wrong with me and be better. And this begins this illusion of hope. If you could just figure out what's bad about yourself and make yourself good, then you're going to get the good treatment. But of course, there was never anything wrong with you to begin with. It was just some kind of misattunement or whatever. And then you grow into an adult with a conviction that there is something wrong with you and that people are scary. And one way to resolve this is, well, let me look a certain way, let me lose weight, or let me not lose weight and keep people away. Or there are all kinds of ways that people use food and their weight to manage relationships.
Yeah. And, you know, my thing, you know, was, I felt like I wasn't enough. You felt you were too much. I felt I wasn't enough. And that is just a horrible, horrible thing for a defenseless baby to feel. Let's just be honest.
or a little boy, or a little boy, or a little girl, or an or any person at all to feel like they're not enough is horribly painful and rejecting.
Because what's he supposed to do? You know, you're supposed to invent, you know, I invented a whole big meal probably, but you know, I mean, that's what we're talking about. But otherwise the child can't, there's nothing he can do but sort of suffer this trauma, really.
And now you want to heal, you want to heal that, that which, you know, has its roots in the past, or, you know, its origins in the past, and shows up in the present. And you want to show up for yourself the way people did not show up for you, the way you wanted them to show up for you, but for whatever reason they couldn't. And that means being, you know, validating, acknowledging, reassuring, supporting, recognizing, uplifting, and just being with yourself in a different way.
So often, go ahead.
So often we learn to, when we need support and we need love and understanding from other people and from ourselves, we learn to beat ourselves up at that moment. When we need a hug, we give ourselves a slap in the face, and we need to learn how to hug ourselves and to be kind and loving to ourselves. Because when you are kind and loving to yourself, you feel better. When you feel better or good, you don't need food to escape yourself.
Yeah. And so all I have right now, the tools I'm using that I've worked on with you, is if we're hungry, let's just take a breath and see if we can't extend this a little bit. Because actually, and I've told you this before, I was hungry this entire morning, so I haven't eaten anything today. And yet all of a sudden I felt very warm and like I was hugging myself. The hunger turned into a feeling of sort of almost voluptuousness or satiation, or I don't know what you want to call it, but it felt very warming and comforting, like a mother, you know, in a mother's embrace. All of a sudden, just hunger turned into that after about an hour or two. So, I mean, I know people fast and they get a thrill out of fasting, but I don't know if that was this for me, because it was a very short amount of time. I'm not fasting all day today. I just ordered some food. I'm having it delivered. But I told myself, don't eat it and hang up on Nina. Just make sure you finish the conversation if it arrives. But anyway, so that's the only tool I really have. So that's what I've been using, and then going with the emotions if they come up.
Okay, so let me give you a couple of very basic tools. One is to figure out, is it emotional hunger or physical hunger? Physical hunger is physical. You feel it in your body. You have like a gurgling stomach, or you feel lightheaded, or you can't think, things like that. And when you have physical hunger, you're going to eat whatever. If you don't particularly like tangerines, but that's what's there, you're going to have it because you're hungry. That's physical hunger. Emotional hunger is located more in your mind than your body. Something sounds good or looks good, or it's going to make you feel differently. And distinguishing between the two of those is very important, first of all. And then when you can identify, well, oh, this is emotional hunger. What is the emotion? What is the conflict? What is going on within you? And that's when you use that my very acronym that stands for validate, acknowledge, and reassure yourself when you feel that way, instead of using food.
Yeah, and then I think there's a part of me that just wants to, like, hang up. Like, last week you said, I said, oh, I'll shut up now. And I feel like you said, you know, and then I said, well, you know, thanks for putting up with me, I think I said. And you said, oh, man, we almost had it. And I feel like there's a part of me that's very critical. that's extremely, who thinks he's so smart. And I feel like that also doesn't help me.
Well, you said that you felt like you were never enough, and those things were very, when, those things that you said, you were denigrating yourself and putting yourself down, and maybe treating yourself as you were treated, or treating yourself as you thought people were thinking about you. And that is the antithesis of supporting yourself. When you say those mean little comments, like, well, you know, everything you said, I'm not even going to give it any more energy by repeating what you said. But any comments that are put downs of yourself, said by yourself, are at odds with being generous to yourself. Nobody has ever hated themselves into loving themselves. No one has ever criticized themselves into feeling good about themselves. So watch the little comments. And if you wouldn't say it to a friend, a child, an animal, someone you love, do not say it to yourself.
Yeah. And I'm just going to run something by you. I feel like the critical voice is a defense from the mistreatment in childhood.
Yes, of course. Identification with the, with it, or again, it's like, it's not them that's the problem. It's me. And I've got to figure out what's wrong with me, and criticize myself to make myself better so that people will love me. Or it's an identification with criticism that was given to you. Absolutely. And now that you identify that, it's time to recognize, well, how is it showing up between you and you? Maybe it was between you and other people, and now it's between you and you. You're criticizing yourself. What if you support yourself instead?
Yeah, and I think the best way I can support myself is, like you were saying, finding out if it's emotional hunger. And I feel like the worst situation for me, as I realized last night, is when I'm a little bit hungry. Like when there's a little bit of truth to it. You know what I mean? Like when I'm a little bit hungry, but then 80% of it is emotional hunger. That's when it's really kind of difficult, because I it's hard to say, oh, well, this isn't real hunger. I'm emotionally hungry, but I might actually be really hungry too. And that's when it becomes more difficult.
It is, but I know you have my book, Food for Thought, but I think you also have The Binge Cure. Follow those steps, because it starts off, okay, physical hunger versus emotional hunger. And then here's how you deal with emotional hunger, which is a lot of what we were talking about today. How do you talk to yourself? In what voice do you talk to yourself? In what tone do you talk to yourself? And healing that part of you that didn't feel good enough as a boy, rather than go, oh,
yeah,
I don't want to see it. Healing him.
Yeah, I think for me, the critical voice came in when there wasn't enough support around me, and I just sort of made up for it by being very harsh or very critical, and that was how I satiated myself, maybe before I started being able to eat on my own, once you're out of childhood. I think in the early childhood, when I was a baby, it might have been, I don't know, are babies critical? I guess I must have been very critical to sort of fill the void left by a lack of love.
Well, babies can feel shame, which is the sense that there's something wrong with them. And by the way, there are two ways that we learn to be self-critical. And you just described one of them, which is when there's this sort of indifference or inconsistency or not enough structure, people learn to become their own parents, only they create boundaries that are super strict. And then they create rules that are very hard to live up to. And then they get mad at themselves for breaking the rules that they created. That is one way that people create this critical stance with themselves. The other way is when they are constantly being criticized and they eventually identify with that critical other and start treating themselves as they were treated.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned identifying with the aggressor, right? Which is sort of like, it's almost like Stockholm syndrome or something, when, you know, you're held hostage. And then eventually you start to say, oh, this hostage taker isn't so bad. I must be crazy. And then that's when the flip gets switched, you know, and that's when the trauma sort of begins.
And that's why it's so important to heal those original wounds. This is not about, this happened in the past and boo-hoo, right? It's not, oh, it happened in the past and they did this to me. Wah. That's not what this is. This is saying, okay, this happened in the past and I never healed from it. And because of that, I am feeling it again in the present. How is the past in the present? Let me just finish. It's how is the past in the present that we want to look at?
Yeah.
How do we, and also healing the part of you that was wounded in the past. And when you do that, it doesn't keep showing up in the present.
Yeah, and I feel like it's all mixed in with our current relationships. I would say that, you know, I'm developing a relationship with you by calling in and talking to you, you know, every week or something like that. And so we must be able to find a piece of that in this relationship, because it's got to be there. It's probably just hiding in a corner somewhere.
Well, you went from being on Instagram to calling in. So you, when you felt safe, you started calling me, and that's how you came to trust that I could be a safe person. For a lot of people who struggle with food, people are fundamentally unsafe. And so they go out and they have sort of a false self, and they talk to their friends and they order salads at lunch and everything's great and everything's fine and all of that. And they go home and then they eat the leftover pizza and they feel terrible about themselves and they beat themselves up for what they think they said to their friends. And it's just, people become a source of anxiety. And remember, food on some level represents people, right? Because of our first experience of being fed as babies, as infants, of being held and feeling safe and all is blissful and right with the world, that feeling is tied in with being fed. So we don't think of it as, we think of food as love, but really we're talking about the wish to be loved. Comfort food, the wish to be comforted. If people are unsafe, unreliable, unpredictable, unavailable, well, you're going to turn to food because food is safe, predictable, reliable, and available.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, I can be very critical. I feel like I thought about you when I was at a bookstore and I was buying a book and I was checking to see if the author, this female author, was a psychoanalyst. And she had some training, but I feel like she didn't really have, you know, there's sort of a line between someone who's a real full analyst and someone who's just had the training. I feel like you're a full analyst. And so I'm very critical. I found myself being very critical about, oh, I would never buy a book from someone, even if they've had psychoanalytic training, if they're not a full analyst. And I'm thinking to myself, what do you think about yourself? You know, and it was funny because I thought of you, not so much the fact that you're a full analyst, but the fact that I was too critical of I could see how it would be too critical of myself if I was too critical. I ended up buying the book. I forced myself to buy it because I said, it doesn't matter if she's not the analyst, you know, of the top analyst. She's had analytic training and let's read her, because after all, you're not an analyst. So why are you judging this other person? And it was what you said about, you know, being critical.
Well, I am so glad that that made its way in your mind, that you were in the moment able to recognize it, see that you were doing it, and that you do it to yourself. And the more that you can catch that and not do that to yourself. And by the way, I hope you get a lot of good stuff from the book. The more that you can do that and be kind to yourself, you won't need food for that purpose. You won't need to sedate yourself with food, fulfill an emptiness with food and all of that. So as always, I want to thank you for calling in and having such an important conversation, because you're really talking about what's in the unconscious rather than just what we know. It's logical, but what affects us the most is what we don't know, and that is often what is psychological.
Right. And I just want to say one more thing about the little baby who may not have had the ideal childhood. I think as adults, there's something that we can have, which is sort of like a feeling of gratitude, where, yes, we're admitting that a lot of damage has occurred, but in the moment, we might be scared that we could never get away rid of our fear. We have fear of everything. We have fear of other people. We have fear of you. Have fear of me. I have fear of you. And I feel like gratitude, if we can sort of get there, is good.
I think gratitude is always good, but not at the expense of truth. And the idea of it would be to hold the things that you are grateful for, without saying, well, I can't feel bad about this because I have so much to feel good about. To be able to hold the things you feel grateful for which you have gratitude, and the things that, you know, that are upsetting you. And that gratitude is often used to weaponize anything painful, rather than, you know, we have pain in our lives and we have gratitude. We need to learn to hold both of them. Otherwise, we don't know how to be, and then we feel bad about just the state of having feelings as a human in the world.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. I appreciate the fact that you're warning me about blanketing over difficult emotions. If it's not food, it could be gratitude. I recognize that. And I think that for me, you know, I can think positively, or I can think negatively. And part of my problem might be negative, critical thinking. So for me, thinking positively about whatever, just about maybe having a good day or having a good meal that's enjoyable, that I'm not freaking out over, and feeling grateful for having it, is something that I'm kind of looking for now as I talk to you, just to be honest. And I feel like, you know, it can help with fear, you know, because the child ultimately is scared.
Well, Josh, I love that thought. I encourage you to do that. Just don't let the positive thinking go. Don't let positive thinking be the thing that you privilege as good. And what is the opposite of positive? Negative. I mean, the reality is we've got things that we struggle with. We've got people that frustrate us, situations that are bothersome. We've got stuff that happens that's like, ugh. And we have good things. If you're going to say, oh, no, only look at the good things, well, then you never express how you feel about the bad things. Yesterday, I went to the eye doctor. I will say an example of this. I went to the eye doctor, which I hadn't been for a couple of years. Obviously, it's been COVID. And the person who does the pre-exam, like, I love my eye doctor, but the person who did the pre-exam was so rude, hostile, impatient, bitchy, awful. And I was just like, oh my God, I wrote my Yelp review, you know, all ready to go. And I was just like expressing myself how horrible she was. And then my eye doctor came in. And she was so bad, I actually said, you know what, I think maybe you should get someone else in here because we're not vibing. I mean, that was how bad it was. It was horrible. My eye doctor came in and everything was fine. If I was just going, oh, but I love my eye doctor, so what happened before doesn't matter. No, I had to express, ugh, this tech was just horrid, and you know, it was just ugh, was so upset. And I love my eye doctor, but if I just said, "Oh, but I love my eye doctor," and I was trying to push down the feelings about the tech, well, what do you think would have happened to those feelings? They wouldn't just stay down. They would have come up in some other way. And then, you know, had I been someone else, or had I been me in a, you know, earlier in my life, I would have gone home and eaten cookies and then gotten mad at myself for eating cookies. Who am I really mad at? The eye tech. So just like hold both, but yes, keep a sharper eye on the positive stuff, but don't ignore the fact that there are things in life that affect us, and you get to have the whole experience of life.
Yeah. And I would just say, I almost would be in your situation. I would be scared. I would be scared about, is this the way that things are? Is there something wrong with me? Is this person not like me? Am I not going to be able to like go to this doctor because of this person? I would have totally internalized that very stressful time.
And that's because of your interpretation, and our interpretations are different. And, you know, the more that you challenge your own mind, the more you have a different interpretation. So instead of, oh, I'm not good enough for this person, or this person doesn't like me, it's this person is treating me badly, and I don't like the way I'm being treated. Am I being difficult and bitchy and awful? No, I'm not. No, she is. So, you know, staying with what you think about other people, and not only what other people think about you, because again, if you've got a spotlight on you and you're ready to think that other people are judging you, then you're going to experience judgment, and you're going to want to hide from other people, and then judge yourself for what you eat and all of that. And it's just a mess. But when you change the way you think about your role in the world, things change. So Josh, I look forward to hearing about your how your experiment goes in focusing on.
We'll let you know about that. And I just say, I think what you just said is so, so amazing. And I do think about that a lot, because, you know, I just really quickly, I would just say that we, you know, when we're afraid of other people, I feel like there is something wrong with ourselves and not so much the people outside. So I just want to say thank you again. And I really appreciated our conversation.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much for calling.
All right.
Have a good week.
Okay, will do. Thank you so much, Nina.
Bye, Josh.
Bye.
Josh always brings up such a plethora of interesting and pertinent points. I want to say this, that our most important relationship is the relationship we have to ourselves, because the relationship we have to ourselves affects all other relationships. It affects the people we have in our lives. It affects our relationship with food. It affects everything. Because if we are critical and self-condemning of ourselves, and we meet someone who's critical of us, who finds flaws and faults and points it out, you're going to feel like, oh, that person knows me well. It's so familiar. But if you are kind, supportive, reassuring, acknowledging of yourself, give yourself a break. You don't have to be perfect to be likable. Let me repeat that. You do not have to be perfect to be likable, which is a good thing, because nobody's perfect. When you like yourself and someone comes along and they criticize you and they condemn you, you're going to say, move along. I want nothing to do with you. So you're going to have better relationships. And when you have a kind relationship with yourself, guess what? You're going to soothe yourself with your own mind, your own voice. You're going to be there for yourself instead of abandoning yourself for whatever's in the kitchen or the drive-thru or the pantry, whatever. You know, just quick story. I know I've told this story before, but it illustrates it so perfectly. I talk about it in my book. And that is that I treated this singer. I can't say who it is because of confidentiality, but she had terrible stage fright because she was afraid that everyone was looking at her going, oh, she looks so much fatter than I thought. And oh, her voice doesn't sound very good. It sounds so much better on, you know, on the radio or on Spotify or whatever. And so she was just terrified to go out and tour because she would be singing and thinking that the whole audience was judging her. Now, of course, everything she thought that people were thinking about her, those were her thoughts. She thought she wasn't thin enough. She was focused on her weight. She thought her voice sounded better after it had been mixed and everything, and it was, you know, on Spotify. Of course, whose voice doesn't sound better when it's gone through mixing than live? So she had all of these thoughts. So we worked on her thoughts about herself, her self-criticism, her self-judgment, all of that. And you know what happened? She went out on tour. But here's the amazing part. This is my favorite part. Not the fact just that she went out on tour, but that she called me from the tour and said how well it was going. And she said, I think totally different people are coming to my shows. different people were not coming to her shows. It was the same audience as before. The difference was that before she had projected her own negative self-view into the audience back at her. Now she was projecting her own positive self-view into the audience and back at her. And so that is a really great illustration of how the way that we are to ourselves has everything to do with the way we experience other people and the world. And when we can be kind to ourselves, not only can we soothe ourselves with words without using food, but we can allow ourselves to be soothed by others. We can allow ourselves to be comforted by others. We can have fulfilling, gratifying relationships with people and not just use food to symbolically fill up. So that is why, you know, I think more than anything that I do or anything I talk about, it's really shifting your relationship to yourself that is the most healing thing of all. And why is this difficult? Because as you could see, if you were listening to my conversation with Josh, so often we get ideas about ourselves because of the way we're treated. We make interpretations, or we're told we're not good enough. No? Last week, I shared that on my report card, I would get straight A's, but one year I got like an A minus in attitude in science, which honestly, it should have been a C. And it was like, what is this A minus? What is this A minus? And it just crushed me. It just made me feel, part of me felt like, come on, it's in attitude. It's in science. You know me, I am not a science person and I do have a bad attitude about science, whatever. Another part of me thought, oh my God, I didn't get straight A's. I didn't get the good attitude. So I was in conflict. So, you know, might have something to do with later slave driving. We get ideas about the way, we get ideas from the way we're treated about ourselves. And we have to kind of look back in time and say, well, these ideas we have about ourselves, where do they come from? I do this amazing group called Binge Free Babes with my friend Kelly Gunter, who lost 243 pounds and then realized that it didn't make her happy. She had to figure out why she was eating. Losing weight did not fix the problem. The problem was something else. And we had this group, this great group, and a lot of the people on Monday night were saying how perfectionistic that they are and how they think that they need to be perfect to be likable and to be lovable. Now, do they think that about anybody else? Oh, no, no, no. Everyone else has the right to be human. They have to be perfect. Where did they learn that? In childhood. So they've got to heal the child part of them that, and so that they can leave that perfectionism in the past and be to themselves the way they are to others. So that's really a goal. I imagine you're really nice to other people and maybe not so nice to yourself. So perhaps you can set a goal to be to yourself as you are to others. What a beautiful world that would be, right? I think so. So that is our show for today. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. Normally, I'm here every Wednesday at 11 Pacific. Today, I was an hour later. You can listen live or on LA Talk Radio or Instagram, or you can listen later at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get podcasts. If you would like information on Binge Free Babes, just go to bingefreebabes.com. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have about the wonderful program that I have. Have a beautiful week. Be nice to yourself. Be curious. Be compassionate and be kind. And I'll see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.